step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm gonna make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you wanna get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
The paranormal, UFOs, monsters, mysteries. You're listening to Talking Weird. And now, from a cabin deep in the Northwoods, your hosts, Dr. Dean Bertram and Jen Durrell.
Good evening, everybody, and welcome to Talking Weird on the Untold Radio Network. I'm one of your hosts, Dean Bertram, and joining me is the always spectacular Jen Durrell. How are you tonight, baby?
I'm doing pretty good. How about you? You feeling good? Better?
Well, yeah. I mean, it's like every episode I'm complaining about my illness for the last couple of weeks. Yeah. I got hit with a stomach bug, came back with a vengeance. But thankfully, I was up to doing. I did another show last night, Emily Menhouse's What the Freak WTF.
How was that?
It was great. She was fantastic. So was a co-host, Will. It was a lot of fun talking about flying saucer culture for an hour. So people should go and check that out if they're not sick of hearing me rant here, as I tend to when we get on the topic of flying saucer belief. What about your week? I know you've been playing around with the brand new introduced, I guess it's called the Seer app or the Seer version of Ghost Tube. Is that right?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I can kind of, I don't know if my little camera will show, but oh, of course, if it's green screen, so then you can't see it. So there is a little app that's new from GhostTube, and it's called Seer. So it's like AI. So you can just kind of wait for an image to pop up. So I don't know if it's the same thing where you can just kind of choose a word and then it generates it. I don't know how it works. I don't know how any of these darn things work, but from where I've used it at a certain location, it does have images that pop up that belong to that location.
What are some of the more striking images? Can you tell us a couple of the ones which really stood out for you?
Well, I mean, if I'm in like the barn or garage area where horses were kept, the last couple times I've used it, horses always come up. When I ask for a family photo will come up. Of course, it's not the same one. So maybe the phone is actually listening to what I'm saying. I don't know. But when I was driving, I used that too. And they do correlate with a lot of the words that I get when I drive too. But there was one, and I actually sent it to you. And so I was sharing with you the photos. So we have them here somewhere, don't we? Because I wanted to kind of show that.
Yeah, we have two here. One of, and you can explain them because you sent me. I'll do the setup, and then you can do the explanation. You sent me a series of photos which this app, the Seer app, had generated, or a series of images, I should say. And there were three images which seemed very striking to me as they'd been things which they seemed to represent things which were significant to me, which was weird. But then again, I think about you a lot. So who knows how this stuff works? Was I projecting my consciousness there was something else picking up on my thoughts. And I'm normally super suspicious about this stuff. People probably listening are going, this just sounds madness. I know, I'm very suspicious of it. But there were three specific images, including an image which was sent. And I'll let you tell the story now because you've got the images there. So you can talk about just this image, I guess.
Well, the first one that you saw, I thought maybe it had something to do with my work because it looked like a cabin. But it also, when I did see it, I thought, well, gosh, that looks a lot like, you know, Dean's cabin. and then I sent that other photo too, I need to kind of get it to pop up here. There it is. So, I thought it was cool because I had just passed the Air Force base and I thought, oh, look, it's a nice little UFO. And then I mentioned, wait a minute, that top looks a lot like the Capitol, right? And then you kind of freaked out about that.
You didn't tell me it looked like the Capitol at first. You sent me the image and I freaked out about the image. And I asked you, what do you think that looks like? Because straight away in my mind, right, it looked like a UFO flying over the Capitol building or hovering over the Capitol building. I said, what do you think that looks like? And you said?
The UFO. And I said, that round part actually looks like the top of the Capitol. That's what I thought I said.
That is exactly what you said.
You're
and then I freaked out a little and I went, I've been playing around with Midjourney, which is an artificial intelligence art creator for a project I'm working on. Mm-hmm. And I had a plan that the next thing I was going to put into Midjourney, because I've always got a number of things I'm working on, I was literally going to put flying saucer hovering over the Capitol building.
Yeah.
So then I said, wait, and I literally, because I hadn't done it yet, I plugged it into Midjourney, that prompt, and then I got this image.
So it's fairly close.
Yeah, I mean, that's a lot more detail, but then again, that is an AI generating art program. Oh, this is just a SEER program, but I mean, there is real commonalities between those two images, like spooky commonalities.
Yeah, just a bit.
So that's what was going on in my head almost the exact time that you sent me that image. It freaked me out.
Yeah.
Again, that's the SEER image. Mm-hmm. That's the Midjourney image with my prompt.
Yeah.
So there we go. Time to cue the like Twilight Zone.
So I'm going to, So I'm still using it. I'm going to see what else I can get from it.
Many terrifying things, I'm sure.
Trying to get,
I don't know what that says about reality either. Maybe we are living in some kind of, you know, simulation and these things pick up on stuff. Who knows? I don't actually believe that.
Yeah.
Who knows what to believe about how strange the world is? Speaking about how strange the world is, you booked an awesome guest for us tonight.
Yes, I did. So we'll go ahead and talk about him. I'll do a little quick intro and then we'll get him on. So he was born and raised in the Cascade Mountains. Our guest hails from a family of storytellers, artists, and musicians. He and his wife, Laura, have spent years collecting folktales and legends of the Pacific Northwest and beyond, having listened to countless family stories regarding UFOs, Bigfoot, strange supernatural beings, ghost towns, logging camps, railroaders, and bootleggers. He brings the authentic firsthand and oral histories of all ages and diverse audience. With his wife, he also authored the 2019 book, The Odd Man Up, which includes a deep dive into North American mythology. So let's welcome our guests, Bob and Tom.
Hello.
Hey.
Hey.
How are you?
Greetings.
Doing great.
Good.
Yeah.
So
thanks for having me. Yeah.
Oh, I'm glad you're here. And I would love to hear all of your stories because I've heard some of them already. So would you like to kind of start off with how you got into the paranormal? Got you into all the spooky tales and.
Yeah, sure. So I sat around listening to my grandparents and my uncles and aunts. Grew up in a family of storytellers, and I've always had encounters from a young age with paranormal. My sister is the same way. In fact, generations of my family report strange encounters with mysterious beings and lights in the sky. I've had a few Bigfoot encounters myself. And therefore, starting in the 80s, around the 80s, sitting around with my grandparents and different senior members of this community out here, started to write down and record different tales and different encounters and basically documentation. And in about 2017, we did our first haunted walking tour, which mm-hmm. included all kinds of cryptids and everything. And it was in North Bend. We started on Halloween weekend. It was October 28th. And we started writing scripts, you know, and taking all of our journals and documenting everything since then. And even in the 80s, I have recordings, I have written documents. So there's so much here. There are so many cryptids that you've probably never heard of. Just bizarre. And this is talking weird. So we're going to get weird yes. tonight.
Yes.
Sound good?
Fantastic. Sounds great.
So I have a whole list.
Okay.
Want me to start at the top of the list?
Let's sure. do
that. Yeah, give us some real weird ones that you know mm-hmm. I might not have heard of, right? Our audience might not have heard of.
Yeah, so there's something called the Bark Angel. And in logging camps, right before an accident, now this has been reported, a beautiful woman will appear in a flash of light and come out of the ground, and she'll be waving her arms or she'll be motioning. And that's right before a line snaps and a bunch of logs come rolling down the hill, that kind of thing. So if they're paying attention, these loggers or choker setters will run off in that direction, follow her direction, and it saves their life. And that's called a bark angel. And she looks like a beautiful angel, like almost like the Virgin Mary. But she appears in a flash of light. And so there are real encounters with this bark angel. Interestingly enough, there is something called the trucker's angel. So truck drivers, you know, coming up over I-90, they'll be coming around a corner and say there's a storm and there's, you know, ice and snow, and then suddenly a flash of light and this beautiful woman will appear waving her hands. And then just around the corner, there's a 14 car pileup. And that's the trucker's angel. Does any of this sound familiar to you folks?
Well, it sounds like guardian angel tales, I guess, when you read about guardian angel tales, like
guardian angels. Maybe not. Okay.
Yeah.
Cool. So what I'm going to read the definition of cryptid that I looked up. And so it used to be that cryptids are animals that cryptozoologists feel that may exist somewhere in the wild, but are not recognized by science. Cryptozoology is considered a pseudoscience, which primarily looks at anecdotal stories and other claims rejected by the scientific community. Now, that was what was online. Now, if you look at anything that is human-like, that has wings or hair or breasts, you know, that kind of thing, anything that's like a mammal, I consider that, and if it's, especially if it's physical, now this is my definition, you may disagree, but if it's able to physically do things, physically touch, grab, move, I consider that borderline cryptid. Would you guys kind of agree?
Where I do agree is that I don't think the delineation that the various camps of Freudian research have divided up the pie between cryptids and UFOs and paranormal are actually as solid lines in the sand as they'd like to imagine. So I do think a lot of these things share commonalities. So I'm very reluctant to say something is a flesh and blood cryptid over here and something is, you know, a psychic projection or a spiritual being over here, because mm-hmm. who knows how common these things are. I mean, what kind of commonalities these things share, rather.
Yes. And then, so search and rescue, there are folks out here that go out looking for people who are lost in the woods, hypothermia, that kind of thing. And there's this other being that search and rescue talks about, and another woman made of light that appears and she will lead the person. A lot of times, the crew that's looking for this lost person is just around the corner, and the woman will lead that person who's hypothermic and delusional, and they'll follow this beautiful woman. They'll see this beautiful woman of light, and they'll walk out and they'll be saved. There's the search and rescue angel. My grandfather. Now, this is where it gets physical. This is very interesting. So when he was hopping trains, he told me that there were many times where he was saved by invisible beings. And he called them his guardian angels, but they were invisible, but he could feel them physically. And I'll give you a couple examples. Very interesting. So he would hop on and fall asleep often on top of a boxcar. And if you look at the top of certain boxcars, they, you know, shed water, and there's a catwalk, a ladder or a catwalk right down the center. So he would wrap his arm around that catwalk. And one time he said he fell asleep and, you know, it was raining and his arm started to slip and he started to kind of slide off of that boxcar. And when he woke up, his body was hanging over and there was a big ravine and these hands came out of nowhere and grabbed him. He could feel these hands and just picked him up and put him back up on that boxcar. And that's why I'm here today and I can tell these stories. It saved his life. Now, another time they went swimming in a mountain lake. Now, this is an underwater being that you're going to love. This is in the Cascade Mountains. My Uncle John was 3 years old. He was so excited to go swimming. They got to the spot, this beautiful alpine lake. He bursts out of the car and he runs down to the lake. Problem is, he didn't know how to swim and he jumped right in that water. And there were some other swimmers at the time and everybody, you know, my grandmother started screaming and just, oh my gosh, you know, because it was deep. Now it was a summer day and all that mud and silt was kind of clouding the water. You couldn't see where he went. So my grandfather, with all of his Sunday clothes on, you know, they just got back from church. He was wearing a nice suit. He jumped right in the water and he was swimming around. And he said that underneath the water, he felt these hands grab around his wrists and pull him almost like an Olympic swimmer, pulled him over so he could feel the top of his son's curly hair and grab onto it. And as soon as he grabbed onto his son's curly hair under the water, those hands let go. And then he was able to drag his three-year-old son and save his life. Now, these are the wow. guardian angels. But physicality, see? It's very interesting. Mm-hmm. So there you go. There's that was a lake angel that I wanted to tell you about.
That's wow. fascinating.
Yeah.
Have you had experiences with something like that yourself? Or
I've had many, many experiences. In fact, this is a cryptid that I saw, and I call it the Possum Man. You know what a possum is. Mm-hmm. So there's a place in Washington near the town of Maltby. Now, you may have heard of this location. They talk about the 13 steps to hell. Does that sound familiar? There's a legend. Yeah, that's nearby here. It's about an hour away. So there's a road called Paradise Lake Road. Now, in 2003, I was coming back from my sister's house, and my sons were in the truck, and we were driving near the intersection where the entrance to Paradise Lake Road begins. And I looked over to my right, and I saw this kind of old man figure, kind of hunched over. I thought, wow, that poor guy. He's kind of limping along with a hood over, like a hoodie. And then as we were passing, this figure turned around and stared at me, and it had the face, this grotesque face, looked like a possum. The best thing I can describe, it looked like a possum. Now, I know you're thinking, okay, you saw a possum man, whatever. Well, the fact is when I got home, I talked to my roommate, and he was from a local tribe around here. I had a roommate, and I told him what I saw. And he instantly, before I finished my sentence, he described this creature in detail. He described and he knew about it. He knew about this creature. He described its face and everything. And so there's that. And that was very interesting. But besides that, along that same road, Paradise Lake Road, we talked to two other witnesses that don't know each other and mm-hmm. claimed that robed figures have been seen down that road. Kind of like these robed monks that'll appear from nowhere. And sometimes they're riding bikes and they're holding staffs and they'll beat the hood of your car and they have grotesque faces. They're robed monks. I guess they're called possum men. I don't know, but there are multiple witnesses that see these robed monks riding bikes with staffs. And they'll appear out of nowhere and beat your car or beat the side of your car. or scare the shit out of you while you're driving
by.
Oh my gosh. Isn't that awesome? I love it.
That's some crazy stuff. Nancy Malcolm, one of our regular listeners and viewers, asks about your angel tales. How does your family feel about these? Do they think they are a religious experience or a paranormal experience? Or maybe they think they're something else.
Okay, so there's a there's two interpretations, and it depends on which cultural lens you're looking through. So my family's very Catholic, you know, so my uncle's a priest. And so on the Catholic side, you know, my grandfather explained it as guardian angels in the Catholic way. But I also have family who are Native American. I'm also, you know, adopted and connected to a lot of the Native family in this area. And in that interpretation, they talk about spiritual beings that live in lakes and guardians that live in the forest and guardians that live on the land. And so they call it guardian spirits. And these guardian spirits can manifest and they can become physical, just like Sasquatch or Sasquatch can become physical. It can appear, that kind of thing, and become physical and do physical things and then disappear again. And that's a guardian spirit. So guardian angel, guardian spirit, two different cultural terms from two different lenses, if that makes any sense.
Fascinating.
Definitely makes sense.
Cool.
I've had my own experiences too with a type of, I don't know if you call it guardian spirit, guardian angel, but I had one protect me when I was getting ready to get in a car accident. And I just totally like freaked out and couldn't think anymore. I literally probably left my body, and it definitely protect me because I felt it come over to the left side. And so when the deer hit my car, I wasn't injured. Car was like completely totaled. And I was like stuck in this pose of, you know, fright, like scared. And all I could hear was the duck just screaming and crying. And it was just freaking me out even more. And so to get me to calm down, all of a sudden everything slowed down. And the person that I always feel that's in my backseat of my car comes forward and says, "Take your foot off the brake." And I'm like, oh. And then everything came back in my head. About driver's ed, you know, you told what to do, how to get out of the skid and all that. It all came back. And I was like, oh my gosh, it snapped me back. But yeah, those are fascinating stories. And so I can definitely relate to the guardian angel or guardian stories. So those are neat.
I love that. Thank you for sharing that. That's beautiful. Yeah. That's beautiful.
Yeah. Yeah.
We had Kaiju Ninja 1985 ask a question, and we are on the Untold Radio Network, which is a very Sasquatch-friendly network. And he asked, has Bob had any Sasquatch encounters?
Yes, I have. I will tell you, I've told this story before, but I'll tell it again for your audience. It was July of 1988, and myself and two other friends were walking to town along the Snoqualmie Valley Trail. It used to be the Milwaukee Line. And we were going to town around 9:30, and we were going to pick up some stuff at the store. We're going to watch some movies, you know, get some chips and candy bars and stuff like that. And I was about 14 years old at the time, 1988. So we turned the corner. We're down the trail, maybe about 20 feet, literally 20 feet. And off to the south, I saw this huge kind of dark shape. It looked like maybe a Volkswagen bug or a little smaller than that. It looked like a big boulder, right? I could say maybe 6 feet by 6 feet, you know? And I thought, what is that? And then suddenly we heard this bellow, and it was this scream, but it was high pitched and low at the same time. The other thing about it is it had an electric shock to it. And so it came out of this object and it hit me in such an unnatural way that it was like an electric shock. And I remember feeling so, like, we just took off running. We were so freaked out. All three of us were just totally scared out of our minds, took off running, right? And then when we got back to the house, my friend said, I remember hearing that same thing up on Tokel Road. I never want to talk about this ever again. And I've tried to contact my friends and ask them if they remember. And I haven't had any response. So, but I do remember it. And since then, my wife and I were listening to recordings of Sasquatch vocalizations online. Mm-hmm. And sure enough, there it was. We heard a recording and I said, that's what I heard in 1988.
Oh, cool.
So there you go. Yep. And I remember this thing kind of stirred a little bit. You know, I could see the object and then it moved as it was bellowing. So I could tell it was moving. So yeah, mm-hmm. just a little bit just to get the sense that it was a, you know, something alive, you know? So there you go.
Yeah. That's, that's freaky. I haven't experienced that. Have you experienced that, Dean?
No, I've never had a Sasquatch experience. Although I'm curious what Bob's interpretation of the Sasquatch is. Like, do you lean to, I guess, the Aper camp where it's flesh and blood, or do you lean to the Woo camp where it's, you know, supernatural or paranormal, or are you somewhere in between those or something else altogether?
Yeah, and to answer that question, and out of respect, I do lean toward the indigenous belief. And so I don't call it the Woo camp. I just call it the traditional camp, maybe, mm-hmm. I guess you'd say. So it is a spiritual being, but I do believe that it can manifest in a physical way. And so what was explained to me is that, you know, the Sasquatch or Bigfoot lives in another world and then comes into this world occasionally, but can become physical. And then we can travel into that world. Now, there are a few famous cases of that. You know, you have 1924, Albert Ostman, Canadian prospector, you know, he was supposedly kidnapped and went into another dimension. And it was a family of Sasquatch. And he saw four creatures, three adults and a child. And he was gone for 6 days and he didn't quite know where he went. There are other stories that we've collected where people, there was a gentleman up in Marysville who just vanished on his back porch. And then his family reported him missing for 3 days. And then 3 days later, he rematerialized on his back porch. And he said that he went to another world where the stick people lived, or Sasquatch lived. They called them the stick people. So, and that's a whole nother story. But that's my belief. I kind of believe that it's a spiritual being. Does that make any sense to you guys?
Yeah.
Oh, yes, totally.
I lean that way more as well. I mean, it is something which isn't here all the time, and it comes and goes. Whatever the spiritual reality of this world we live in is or isn't, somehow some of these things aren't here with us all the time. Some of those stories, too, you were mentioning then, makes me, of course, think of David Pilates' missing 411 stories. Mm-hmm. And if people can enter this other dimension, perhaps unwillingly, maybe that explains where some of the missing in these more anomalous missing people stories go.
Yeah. And there's many names. We can talk about some of the known ones here. We have the hide behind. Have you ever heard of the hide behind? It's a logger term.
My daughter just loves the hide behind. She talks about it all the time because she's read Chad Lewis's book, which he gave us. So she's all about the hide behind.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I love it. Yeah, the hide behind stories are here as well. Some people call it the Tenerife around here, the Tenerife. There's a Mount Tenerife or Tenerife right over here. Mm-hmm. We have Skookum. We have Sasquets, which is the kind of the original way to say Sasquatch, Sasquets. It's a simple way to remember it. Just think of baskets and just change the first letter to S, and then you've got Sasquets. And you got Sasquatch, which originated in the 20s. That was kind of a anglicized version of the word Sasquets. We have the big man. We have the hairy man. We have the bush man. My wife's tribe also refers to something called the Nahani and the Nukluk, N-U-K-L-U-K. Now, the Nukluk is a 5 foot tall, sort of Neanderthal looking creature covered in hair, humanoid, sometimes wearing primitive clothing and carrying primitive tools, but seen in her village. And there's a famous sighting. Ivor T. Sanderson reported in 1964 a sighting of the Nukluk in Fort Liard, which is my wife's hometown. So it is very much connected to her tribe. So that's another fun one. You have closer to me, we have Zunaqua. Zunaqua, which is the wild basket ogress of the woods. And then we have Bakwa, who's the wild man. So we have male and female. We have around here, we have Dashkaya. Now, Dashkaya is an ogress woman, just like you'd hear about in Poland or Germany or France. She's got a big old nose and running with snot, and she's a cannibal. She likes to eat children.
Gosh.
So, So she lives in a cave. She comes out in the summertime, you know, she picks berries and she uses that as bait. And she'll reach out. And when the child reaches for the berry, she pops him over the head into the basket. Excuse me, I'm coughing. That's getting okay. Emotional. Anyway.
The berry thing's fascinating. There's a long and weird history of people encountering creatures when they're berry picking. Everything from Sasquatch to UFOs to everything you can think in between. So I'm not sure what that means, but I think John Keel talked about it. I know when you read the books by Albert Rosales about the humanoids, if you go through the dozen or so books of that again and again, you'll bump into these encounters with weird creatures when people are picking berries. So there seems to be some potent, I don't know whether it's a potent archetype or whether, for whatever reason, berry picking seems to evoke these type of experiences.
For sure. For some reason, I'm coughing. Ooh. Yeah.
That's okay. So, something else Horace Smith just said, which I was thinking about as well. I think this is when you were talking about people disappearing and going to another reality.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details. With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
He said, reminds me of Dean's fairy stories, because I'm always obsessed with the type of fairy faith mm-hmm. and fairy lore out of Ireland, where we have similar stories to people who are here and then, you know, they are taken by some other non-human but humanoid species and they're taken elsewhere. So cross-culturally, this is, again, much like the berries thing, there are similarities between a lot of these stories, which just seem to extend from, you know, different continents even. It makes you think that there's a root to some of this stuff, something which is phenomenologically based, not just based on, you know, folklore mm-hmm. or based on, of course, a lot of folklore is probably phenomenologically based as well, but there is a root phenomenon which people are experiencing, which makes these stories so potent and makes them enter the type of folkloric narrative, the type of stories that you collect, Bob.
Yeah. So you're in Missouri, right? You're both in Missouri.
I'm in Wisconsin. Jen's in Missouri.
Yeah, I'm in Missouri. Oh, okay. Yeah.
So let's talk about little people. Now, let me ask you a question. Do you have any little people stories from Missouri? Do you have little people stories there?
I'm sure we do. I mean, I have my own, but I'm a completely different, I'm not the norm. So, but I'm sure they do in Wisconsin too. So, right.
Well, we have the circus midget story, the town of Haunchyville, the legendary town where the circuit midgets supposedly retired. And if you go there, you're likely to get either scared off if you're lucky or killed if you're unlucky.
Okay.
Whether it's true or not, whether Haunchyville is true or not, it's certainly a very potent urban legend and one of the more fascinating aspects of this type of folklore in Wisconsin, I think.
Yeah, so we have some little people around here. Some of the names you're not supposed to say aloud. It's kind of like fairies, right? You were mentioning that. And it brings bad luck. Yep. So
yeah.
So I got to be careful. I can't say these certain words. Yeah. No. Or they'll cut me off. Anyway, so there's also the Hmong refugees that came to this area. Now, in the late 70s, there were folks that were coming from Laos and Vietnam, the Vietnam War, and they're the Hmong people, H-M-O-N-G. And when they arrived here, their language was 100% intact. Their religion, it still is. They're still very active. Okay. One of the stories I heard was they encountered some strange beings down at the Snoqualmie River. Now, these people had been here. These beings had been here for thousands of years. So there was a farmer, and he bought a brand new trailer. And this was to be used to take his produce and flowers to the market. And he was so proud he had saved money for this trailer. And he parked it on the riverside. And wow, he was so proud. He went to bed. He woke up the next morning, and it was gone. He was like, oh my gosh, he had spent thousands of dollars on this beautiful truck. And he was so upset. And so he went to see a special elder who said he had information about where his trailer went. And he said that there was a family of little people that lived along the Snoqualmie River, and they were having a wedding, and they needed to borrow this trailer, and they would return it right to the spot where they took it from when they were done. And so he said, don't worry, don't worry, you'll have your trailer back. And so sure enough, a couple days later, he went down there, and there was his trailer back where he had parked it. And so these are people from another country who were refugees, who had, you know, a very ancient religion, ancient language, fresh in the country, and having experiences with the supernatural and the paranormal. And they were sharing, and they shared so many stories about their first interpretations and how they communicated to different plants. And there was so much. We actually learned so much about the world around us from another culture that moved here recently, just because of their religion, just because of their language and their sensitivity. They talked about giants. They talked about guardians. Now, here we go. You're talking about woo-woo in the Sasquatch community. Let's just talk about a transparent interdimensional Bigfoot. Let's just talk about that for just a second. So in that same area where the little people took the trailer, there's a roundabout. It's a very ancient spot. This woman named Katina was driving her car, and she was driving her car in this roundabout area. And all of a sudden, this large 9-foot-tall creature came out of the woods, but it was transparent. It was like a shadow Sasquatch. Came out of the woods, came up to her car, and just pounded its fists on the top of her car. And then it ran back in the woods. So interestingly enough, Katina, you know, who's American, grew up here, her description of this shadow figure, 9 feet tall, matches the same description as the Hmong flower farmers, these refugees. They said when they first planted their fields, they asked permission from who? From guardians that lived along the river. They had to ask permission. Can we plant our flowers here? Can we farm here? And they gave them permission. And they described these beings as tall, 9 foot tall shadow figures, kind of humanoid. And so it's so interesting. They had that perception without anybody telling them. They had encounters and had communication with these shadow Sasquatch guardians. They're guardians. So there you go.
Yeah, that ties into the
idea. I know, I could ramble forever. I'm sorry.
No, it's great. It's great. That ties in again to the fact that some of this might be phenomenologically driven more than belief or culturally driven. I mean, I think there's a combination. I think things do influence each other. But when you hear a story like that, yeah, fascinating.
Yes, for sure. Then we also have our Loch Ness monster. You know, we have the Lake Chelan monster. We also have the Ogopogo. So Lake Chelan is it's along the Columbia River. It's connected to the Columbia River. Now, the Ogopogo is said to live in Lake Okanagan. So the interesting thing about Lake Chelan is we went into the museum, and the woman there said, yes, many locals over the years say that there's a certain time when the water in Lake Chelan acts like a serpent. This is the real phenomenon. And so there are diaries and logs where ships and boats would just pull over to the right because there's this point where the water just starts like thrashing like a serpent. And scientists have not been able to basically figure out what it is. But it's a fact that these captains are writing in their journals that they have to pull over and wait for the thrashing water to subside. And the description of the water looks serpentine. And it's all in their journals. Like, they have journals full of this stuff. And that's where the Lake Chelan monster really comes from, you know. It's very interesting. So that's one. And the Ogopogo is another, very much like the Loch Ness monster type thing. and that's Lake Okanagan. And that goes back thousands of years and very similar in description to Nessie at Loch Ness. So we have those things here. And I think you have some in the Great Lakes. Am I right?
Yeah, I think there were tales of some serpents there. There were even tales in other lakes here, like Devil's Lake, which isn't, I don't know, probably a couple hours to my south, but I've been there. Mm-hmm. There's a Native American story there about there used to supposedly be a lake monster there. It's not meant to be there anymore. I think in the lake near Madison, I should know what it's called. I don't know what it's called, but I know that has a genuine, you know, ongoing report of some type of lake monster. And certainly across the world, I think there's, I don't know what the actual line is, but there's a line which runs across around the planet where a lot of these lakes actually are on. Like Loch Ness is on there, I think, or Lake Okanagan is on there. I think a lot of them seem to be along this type of parallel line. And so I don't know whether that means there's physical creatures in there, or maybe it means something about just that space on the planet, but there does seem to be something which carries across. I know a number of authors have written, but I know Ken Gerhard mentioned it in his book on Loch Ness Monster and other aquatic cryptids, but it predated Ken's book. I think people have been talking about that for a while. Maybe John Keel was the first person to note, maybe Ivan Sanderson, somebody like that anyway.
What do you think, Jen? You have any comments or questions for me at all?
Oh, well, I do remember a certain podcast. There is a certain story that you had told once before about little people. I think that was a personal story. I'm not sure which one it was, but I would love to hear it again because it was a really cool story.
Okay, guys, we're going to get weird here. Are you ready?
That's what we like to do. We were born ready to get weird.
Okay. Yeah. All right. So this was exactly 1 year ago. And I just realized that I'm basically sitting in the exact same spot where it happened. Okay. So our bed used to be right here to my left. And my wife and I would be laying right here facing this direction. It was the first day of spring last year. I woke up at 12. We both woke up at 12:03 a.m. And the curtain was drawn. And I noticed suddenly that there was this beam of light that was literally coming straight this direction through the window into this other wall over here. And it was red. And then there was this curtain of kind of, it looked like the northern lights in our room. And I screamed. I did scream. And I admit it, I screamed. And it was this strange thing. And my wife, she goes, shh, shh. She patted my chest. And I'm like, ah, ah, ah. I'm screaming. I'm freaking out, okay? Yeah. And I'm not kidding. This is absolutely true. I don't care if you guys think I'm crazy. You probably don't. But there's a lot of people that might think I'm crazy. Over on the other side of this membrane, like that was right here, we could see these little people, like little just a flash of like the eyes and the teeth. And they were walking along. You could just see it in this direction, going this direction. And they were little people like this. And I know this sounds like BS, but it's not. And I was wide awake. We were both wide awake. We were looking at this. Like, so this membrane is going across our legs. So just imagine around the knee level, maybe a little lower than the knee, this curtain of light, this red light and this beam of light. And then on the other side of the membrane, you see these little people and you can see their faces and they kind of looked over. And I mean, I was so freaking scared. Can you imagine? And my heart was just beating like a son of a bitch. I couldn't believe it. And then all this stuff just kind of went and then went into the wall into like a ball of light and disappeared. And I just realized I happen to be sitting in the exact same spot. So I didn't plan it that way. I swear to God, I didn't.
I'm going to look real careful now just behind you for the rest of this interview.
Yeah, just look.
That's like the fairy folk as well, coming and going and passing through homes. And they're well known to do that. They'll pass through a place which is in their path, at least in Ireland, between the forts. If you build your house on a fairy line, they'll go right through.
So the explanation of that is we had a friend who's a psychic who said that my grandfather and my dad were sending a message because my dad had just passed away just prior to that on March 10th. So they were showing us something to show us that there's something beyond. They wanted to show us something miraculous. So that was their explanation, that my dad and my grandpa got together and they made that happen. And I'm like, cool. All right. I can handle that.
Yeah.
Another explanation is we talked to my wife's, my mother-in-law, my wife's mom, who's up in Fort Liard, the home of the Nukluk, right? And she said that she had an aurora borealis type thing happen in near her bedroom window. So there was a simultaneous, maybe a week before that, where she had some kind of light event coming near her window or in her window, aurora borealis type thing. So, and she is an elder, and yeah, I thought that was pretty interesting. So there's a few, there's more to that, but go ahead, ask away, ask any question you want.
Yeah. I was just going to make a quick comment saying that it isn't unusual to have strange experiences occur after a loved one passes. Like there's a definite connection, obviously, between death and the paranormal, but death and all types of paranormal and anomalous phenomena. As Joshua Cutchin's book, Ecology of Souls, makes quite clear, these ongoing cultural as well as experiential overlap between the anomalous and death. But I think Jen was going to ask a question. I just wanted to make that comment.
Oh, well, I mean, as you were just saying about loved ones when they pass on, I've had tons of experience with that, with mine as well. But it's always nice when they do show up and give you these subtle hints that they're there. It's really comforting. But that's a very different extreme one. So I don't know if your dad and grandfather or had a sense of humor or something to scare you or something like that? Would they normally do that?
Well, every year now on March 20th, we've had something happen. So that was March 20th last year. Now, just this last week, March 20th, we had another thing happen. This has nothing to do with cryptids, but I teach music and I was in the living room and I could hear this pounding coming from the basement. And I thought, oh, is my son down there? I thought maybe he was fixing his chainsaw or he was doing something. I didn't know. It just sounded like someone working with tools. And I had just been down there and I'd locked it up and we were playing banjo. Actually, we were playing banjo. And then I realized that the pounding was kind of going to the beat. And I was like, oh, interesting. And then I realized that the sound of the pounding was identical to when I used to hear my grandpa building bird houses in the basement in the 80s. And he'd have a little ball peen hammer.
Oh, wow.
And he'd be putting little shingles on. And this was the day of his death. March 20th is the day that he died, right? And so right when I realized that and I could see my student, she could hear it. She goes, what is that? What is that? Right under my chair, there was a big thump and it rattled my whole chair right under the floor. And I was like, oh, my God. It's like someone took an object, a cane, and just kind of purposefully wanted to, you know, vibrate my chair. So I was like, okay, I got to go see if someone's in the basement. And you know the end of the story. I ran outside. I went to the door. It was padlocked. Lights are off. Nobody there. So, every year, March 20th, baby. You guys should come over on March 20th.
I'm sure Jen would enjoy that.
That's fascinating.
Yeah. I try to run from the paranormal. Jen runs too.
We
had another question from Kaiju Ninja 1985, and it's a good question. Why does Bob think some of these other cryptids aren't as well known and talked about as Sasquatch? Why is Sasquatch so popular compared to them?
Yeah. I think Sasquatch is popular just because it's so well known already, and it's become like an icon, a pop icon. Before the whole Sasquatch thing, like in 1958, that's when the word Bigfoot became, as you know, the history of Bigfoot, the word Bigfoot, Jerry Crew in 1958. You know, there were mentions of wild men and that kind of thing, but there were more, you know, descriptions of different, you know, sizes and different attributes in the old religion. It wasn't just the one. Nowadays, it's so popular that everybody gets lumped into this one, you know, category. It's all Bigfoot. It's all Sasquatch. Whereas in reality, there are 30 different variations of sizes, of descriptions of fur and eye color. And I mean, those are all different beings in the language. So it's not just one. So it's a misunderstanding. It's just lost in translation between, you know, the old culture and the new. It's just everything's been consolidated into one thing called Bigfoot. It's actually 30 or 40 different things. There are giants that have their own name. You know, there are little people, like I said, covered in fur. There are all different manifestations. They're actually like, you know, kind of like dog men, but cougars that, you know, walk upright. There are creatures like that.
Yeah.
You know, they have a name as well. Cougars that walk like a man or walk like a human. And there's just so much more. But that, like I said, it's just been lost in the cultural transition. So.
I know in the introduction to your book, The Odd Man Up, and I've heard you talk about it elsewhere, you make a point of saying that there are often traditional histories leave out mm-hmm. some of the darker aspects of what the real history is. They almost become sanitized. And mm-hmm. I think mm-hmm. it's pretty clear that you attempt to save these type of folkloric stories. Can you talk about a little bit about how you go out and gather these type of tales?
Yeah, well, I'll give you an example. We were at someone's house the other day, a 90-year-old woman, and she shared with us a whole collection of her research for the last 50 years. And this doesn't have to do with the paranormal, but it's an example. She has been collecting corruption in local politics for the last 50 years. She has saved everything that she found interesting about a certain politician. And she would cut out that little newspaper article and she would paste it and collage it. And she had scrapbooks for the last 50 years. And we have them now at our house. She let us borrow them. But this is stuff that is, and she had the wall of shame. You know, she had all these faces and these are some of these people I knew. And these are people that sold us out to development. Right. And so I'm like, oh my God, he's one of them. And I go, where's my dad? Is my dad in here? She goes, no,
no, no.
She says, your dad was a good man. He didn't sell out. He was a good man. But this guy was not a good man. They were rotten to the core. It actually said rotten to the core. So,
wow.
So people like that are just fantastic. And, you know, there's a lot of people out there that keep records in an old school way, not online, mm-hmm. you know, right. written physical copies like these scripts I have in front of me. And that is the secret history. And I mean, this, and even though these things were in newspapers that she cut out, the fact that they're all put together in a certain way that you can read in order, you can actually figure out the history in order and actually deduce other things about these individuals that weren't in the paper. That's the brilliance of her copies. So I'm very passionate about preserving, you know, those things, those secret histories. And, you know, you can also get a lot of stories just orally. You can talk to people. And you can put together, you know, the missing pieces just orally, you know, and then cross-reference with physical records.
So have you ever experienced like lights in the sky? I mean, like orbs or amber lights or anything like that, just randomly floating around? I figured it would be really, yeah, like really prevalent in that area.
Yeah, the orbs that I talked about, like the lights were in this room. Mm-hmm. As far as orbs in the sky.
Or at least on the ground, too.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. You know, I've seen orbs, like, in the ground. Like, as a kid, you know, I remember seeing orbs of light, you know, floating around our house, that kind of thing. My sister did, too. She used to have that's right. Now I remember what I was going to tell you. Mm-hmm. My sister, Chris, you should interview sometime. She's fun. She used to have a man named David appear at her bedside. And, you know, the stories I've seen it online referenced, the man in black with the cowboy hat that appears to people. Well, they call it the man in black kind of thing, but they're often wearing
the
hat man. Yeah. So she had a story where she would communicate with this guy, David, but he would talk in a different language and he would appear at the bedside. And they would talk in this different gibberish language. And, you know, I don't know what language that is, but she had multiple conversations with a man named David in a black outfit, all black and the black hat, almost like a man in black. But during
I got chills when you said that story. Then I don't know why there was something about the gibberish man in hat appearing at the, which I just felt it run up. And I talk to people like, you know,
really?
About weird stuff all the time. And then I physically had a reaction. Weird.
Are you being serious?
Yeah,
I'm 100% serious. I don't say this to. Have I ever said this to a guest before that I've had a physical reaction from a story? Mm-hmm. No, have I ever said it, Jen?
No, you haven't.
No, I had a physical like I really felt that story at a visceral kind of level. Good grief.
So I wanted to point out something. Do you remember earlier when I started coughing? Mm-hmm. Now, when I was saying some of these names, I realized that I was kind of borderline. I was like, all right, I'll say it out loud. Mm-hmm. But there was a moment where it's like, okay, stop. And yeah. I was kind of shut down there. But that's an example of sometimes when you're saying too much, because I know a lot of information, but sometimes I'm not allowed to say it all. So I was like, okay, I might have just had a cough, but I also could have been stopped in my tracks for a second. Like, mm-hmm. So, here it comes.
Uh-oh. Yeah.
And it's very true about talk. I normally don't say fairy. I normally always say fair folk or gentry or the other crowd. There are polite ways to talk about some of these things, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
There was a good question here, which was related to Jen's orb question. And that was, again, from Kaiju Ninja. Jeez, he's asked some great questions tonight. And that was, do you think there is a UFO connection to cryptids, Bob?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, let me see here. How do I say this? I've said this before. There are so many things here, especially in my area of the world, unrecorded history and things that we don't know about. There are ancient sites that people don't even realize are ancient. Now, a lot of times these mysterious orbs and lights in the sky and cryptid phenomenon, they'll happen around volcanoes like Mount Baker, Mount Adams, and that kind of thing, Mount Rainier, Mount St. Helens. And so there are things that we do not quite understand. There's a group called the E-SETI Ranch, and they set up at a location that faces Mount Adams. And they claim, and I've never been to the ranch, they claim to communicate to interdimensional beings that come in and out of the mountain. They live inside Mount Adams. They live in another dimension kind of thing, but they also live inside the mountain. And apparently these things come out and they have video of these lights coming and going. Sometimes the lights will come and land or, you know, hover right over the campsite. And then some of these folks, and I guess you'd call that the woo-woo camp, you know, they talk about Sasquatch and, you know, things communicating with them. So again, another cultural lens, people believe, you know, they have names for it. They have a race of beings, you know, that they talk about. They'll have a specific name for it. So it might all be the same thing, but it might not. It just depends on what language you're speaking, what culture you're coming from. But it seems to be consistent that, yes, wherever there are cryptid sightings or places of high strangeness, you know, you've heard this over and over again. They're all connected. They all seem to be connected. So, and I've seen the same thing. We've seen the same thing in our, you know, research. So.
Interesting. Nancy had a related question as well about any comments on crop circles.
Okay. Crop circles. Let me think about that. Crop circles. We went up to a site. This is one thing that I could sort of connect with crop circle. It was actually in the ferns. It was a circle burned in the ferns in the forest that we photographed. So there's a famous story. It's on a MUFON site. It talks about a group of campers that about 14 miles from here, they were camping in the summertime back in about 2006, I believe. And in the middle of the night, they woke up and there were lights all around the tent and laser beams and lights and weird things. And they woke up and there were these little people. It's kind of interesting, kind of similar. But in this case, the description is they had large heads and they were making dolphin noises. They were making the sound of dolphins and chattering outside the tent. And one of the hands came in and then one guy like freaked out and took his shoe and hit the hand of this alien thing or whatever. So, of course, what are we going to do? We're going to go up there and investigate. So we went up and we found the coordinates. And the day that we went up there and found the coordinates, very interestingly, we found a perfect circle burned into the area there. It was all like ferns. Huh. So the ferns on the outside of the circle were nice and green, but everything in this circle was burnt. Looked like a landing site or something weird like that. I don't know. But the thing is, it was a very nice, you know, lush area. There's no reason that these ferns would have been burnt. There's no fire. There's no sign of fire. So that's my reaction to crop circle. That's my first thing that comes to my head. There you go. Yeah, I was there. Is it that was you?
That was Kaiju Ninja said he was there.
Oh, that's so awesome.
There you go. I'll leave the last question to Jen.
There's so many. Well, we didn't touch base on skinwalkers. So,
skinwalker?
Yeah. I mean, I don't know if I would consider that a cryptid. It's definitely your kind of more spirit world, I guess, maybe. I mean, what is your thought on those exactly?
Yeah, skinwalkers. I think skinwalkers, that's a Southwestern cultural term. And I definitely think that that's connected with that area of the world. As far as anything up here that's connected to skinwalkers, I just know that some of the old stories talk about transformation, people that spiritual beings that can transform, anamorphic, that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. There's so much of that in the ancient stories. And if you want to know more of that specific information, you know, please go on to the University of Washington, the Burke Museum, go into their archives. There's so many books that you can read about the old, like, Salish stories and that kind of thing. And by the way, that guy that said I was there, he really was there, because that's my friend Tristan. And yeah, that's Tristan Yolte. So shout out to Tristan. Tristan and his mom, they are Bigfoot hunters. You should have them on your show. They, us three, we went up to that site. So he actually was there. So, wow. Yep, there you go.
Fantastic. So, Bob, you were an incredible guest. So many great stories. We're going to have to have you back on the show at some stage as well. But how does our audience get a hold of what you're up to or what you're doing? Or have you got some URLs you could throw out you'd like them to look at?
Oh, you know, you can find me on Instagram or Facebook, or you can email me, bobantone@hotmail.com. It's pretty easy to find it. If you just Google search Bob and Laura Antone, a whole bunch of stuff will pop up. But you can find us on social media real easy, real easy. Here's my phone number. No, just kidding. I swear to God, I won't swear the next time. I apologize for that. But, you know, it happened.
These things do happen.
I'll keep it clean.
You were clean in every other way, Bob. And again, it was a great joy chatting to you. I really enjoyed it. I'm so grateful to Jen for having reached out to you, because it was a lot of fun. And I love interviews or conversations that go all over the Fortean map, which we certainly did tonight. And just thanks for coming on. And I guess until we get to chat to you again, keep it weird.
Guaranteed. Thank you so much.